Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for the opportunity to talk this morning. I'd like to thank the organisers for putting together this symposium. I think I would have liked to have seen much more on culturally and linguistically diverse and HIV and mobile populations in this conference, given the data that's being presented in nearly every session, actually. Let's hope that changes next year. But my talk, I feel it's been very well preceded by the speakers that have come before me and other speakers at this conference. So I hope I'll tell you something you might not know, but I think it's really about bringing together what we do know and saying, you know, we actually know what's going on, we know what to do. Can we just get on with it? I'll put this up again. Gemma showed it to you earlier. But we are talking about culturally and linguistically diverse people from high HIV prevalence countries and those who travel to those regions and their partners. And we're seeing the data increase in overseas acquired HIV and overseas born people in Australia, from Southeast Asia and sub-Saharan Africa. So those are our targets at the moment. As Gemma said, we have been thinking about this, noticing these trends for quite some time, and the roadmap for action was published in 2014. We really did try to look for all the evidence, both Australia and internationally, to see what we knew about mobile populations in high-income countries and how we could address HIV and mobility issues. And this year, earlier in April, this article was published in HIV in Australia, which some of you may have seen, which kind of will include much of what I'll say today. So if you don't catch it, please read that article. But what are the issues? We've talked about some of them already. I think one of the key ones for health promotion is how do we even target these groups? Travellers, migrants, MSM, they're not connected to the gay community necessarily. They're just not getting the education around HIV prevention, early testing, medications that others are getting. And so even when we do find them, how do we do that most appropriately in terms of health promotion education? And then, we find that they actually might have quite a good knowledge of HIV and transmission, but then there's all sorts of other social, cultural, political, environmental factors that are also influencing their readiness to test, and some of them are listed there, which you've already heard about. Stigma is a big one. Cost and exclusion. This low visibility of HIV, they feel like they're safe here. They don't see themselves at risk. They're not seeking testing as a result. Or medications, and that's leading to their diagnoses. And just practical things around language and culture, even when we use translators, are those translations accurate? Do we have words for what we're trying to say? How do people understand those things? And of course, they do have other priorities. Many of these people have trauma experiences. They might be more concerned about their employment and their housing rather than their sexual health. So a few more issues here. Huge cultural diversity. So many countries in these regions, even within those countries, hundreds of dialects, refugees, international students, migrants, expats, people living with HIV, that intersectionality, we've heard that word several times during the conference, where these things come together, or many of these things come together. And then these things around stigma and discrimination, the double stigma of both being a migrant and being, I'll put these up now actually so you can see, and living with HIV, for example, not feeling welcome, concerned about contacting authorities, don't want to be seen as one of those using too many resources. So we see them flying under the radar wherever they can. Navigating our health systems, are AIDS councils still appropriate? Does that actually mean anything to people living here in these groups? Maybe it does, but and the history of the AIDS Council, no one can deny how incredibly infective they've been. But to reach these people, are they the right organisations? And we've talked about Medicare and eligibility, and of course our workforce. There's a lot of new skills and knowledge to learn for these healthcare professionals. traditionally, we've used an individual focus. Many of these groups come from very collectivist cultures. They don't care about what happens to them necessarily. They care about what happens to their communities, their families, the people they care about. So we also need to reflect that in the way we deliver our care. So these issues, I would say, are increasingly acknowledged across all jurisdictions and are contributing to the later diagnosis we're seeing, poorer health outcomes, and of course they remain a public health risk if people remain undiagnosed or untreated. So the roadmap identified five areas for action in these five areas. It's mainly international and Commonwealth leadership, community mobilisation, development of services for mobile or migrant groups, and of course surveillance research and evaluation. We were quite pleased at the end of it. It was a tortuous thing to put together, but on reflection, maybe that was a bit overwhelming. It was certainly overwhelming for us to put all that information together. So I think that, looking back and reflecting, I would almost say, if I'd had my time again, we might have selected what were the key things we would have focused on and, you know, been happy with that rather than trying to address these enormous amount of strategies. So one of the things we did set up, and you would have heard about this already, is the Community of Practice for Action on HIV and Mobility, with funding from the WA Health Department, thank you. This now has 80 members, and its real idea is it's not so much, it was just to keep this on the radar, to get a group of people together who were interested in this issue, because so few people were at the time, and to talk about what needed to be done. So we did a couple of report cards on that roadmap in 2015 and 2016, which some of you may have seen at previous conferences. And in that, we observed many small-scale targeted responses that were done in isolation, no coordinated efforts, and really this risk that those short-term programs would discontinue as soon as funding stopped. We've all kind of been there. So I think that's where we are at the moment. I wanted to put this in the context of what has happened in HIV more generally, because I think it's given us some support in many ways, but it's also shown us where the disparities are. So you'll all be aware of this, but you know, some of the things listed here, the ATRIS study, it showed that it's cost neutral to provide treatment to Medicare ineligible people. So, you know, it's a no-brainer, we just need to do it. The U equals U2 consensus statement endorsed internationally. This is a message we need to get out to these groups. But is it meaningful? How do we do that for these groups? Have we done that effectively? Lots of work around stigma and our global commitments to reducing HIV-related stigma and discrimination. All the trials for PrEP, and certainly this downward trend in HIV diagnoses, apart from in these populations. And very pleasing to see these populations have been included in the 8th National HIV Strategy. And very pleasing, I just learned this week that there's a Medicare-ineligible expanded PrEP trial going on. So, you know, I think some really good things are happening, as I said earlier, we do know that we can actually, we know how to respond to this issue, but our success has actually shown us where the inequalities and disparities are. But we have been very busy, our team in WA and all across Australia. And when I was sort of looking for the most recent research beyond the roadmap, there were more than 24 Australian studies, and that's just what I found. And I've kind of just put them here, and you won't be able to read them, but I wanted to show you that there's a lot of work being done. And if you want to look at any of these, please contact me or our COPAM coordinator, Corey Gray, and we can definitely put you in touch with these. But there's heaps of work that's been done, which is great. So what have we learnt from all of this? Increasing acquired overseas acquired HIV. I mean, how many times can we say it? You know, it's we know what's happening, and this epidemiology is changing. So we've been really effective in dealing with gay and MSM populations in the early epidemic, but now we need to turn our focus to these other communities. And we're seeing these high HIV diagnosis rates, particularly in Asian-born MSM, Southeast Asian and Sub-Saharan African-born men and women. Our Medicare and eligible people are four times more likely to become HIV positive in the 4 years after arriving in Australia compared to their local peers and have delayed HIV diagnosis. And we've got low uptake of testing. So I think we've heard these messages several times now. Most interventions seem to be focused on the individual migrant's behaviour consisting of a single strategy. Very few are addressing these wider sociocultural factors, including family and religion, that really, you know, taboo topic. Nobody wants to talk about religion, but we have to. These things influence how these groups might access our services. We need more targeted, culturally appropriate interventions that address the barriers that we know, and these more broader socioeconomic and sociocultural factors. And I think the other point I want to make, and I've heard it very pleasingly a few times in the conference, is the quality of the data. So even we have low participation rates in some of our surveys for some of these groups, but that's possibly because we don't know what questions to ask, or they're not understanding the questions that we are asking. And so I think we have to get better at collecting more reliable data and getting adequate participation. I think I've said that. So some research highlights. There's no way I can go through everything fantastic that's going on in this area, but just a few things I wanted to draw your attention to. There has been lots of analysis of data, we've seen some of it this week, to identify the populations with late diagnoses, low uptake of testing treatment. So we do know where the pockets of problem are. There's also exploratory and intervention research going on right now with specific communities, including Corey Gray at Curtin University, who's doing a co-design project with Indonesian women to improve or address barriers to HIV testing. We are looking at research methodologies to increase cultural appropriateness. We're looking at peer researcher models for recruitment, and we're looking at audio computer assisted self-interview techniques, and I've seen research on walking interviews. There's consideration of extending the gay community periodic survey to overseas-born gay and bisexual men, bisexual and heterosexual men who have sex with men. And the other one I wanted to mention was our ARC linkage project, or MIBS now called, and some of you may be familiar with this. And this was to do with not having enough periodic or behavioural surveillance survey for these groups. So it's a four-year study led by Curtin. It's a huge collaboration of 10 NGOs and multicultural services, peak bodies and health departments in three states and more recently in Queensland. And really we're looking at what is the feasibility. If we wanted a periodic survey of this type, what would it take? Some qualitative inquiry with our targeted groups to inform that survey and test it. And we really want to see what is the effectiveness of different recruitment survey methods as well. So that's exciting, and it's underway. And Daniel Vucic's the project coordinator, if any of you want to get in touch. So we do have the tools and the know-how to virtually end if these inequalities are addressed. We've seen the FAO blueprint. Gem has held up the priority actions document. We do know what to do. I won't go through these again because you saw them. Thank you, Chris. You showed them earlier. So please refer to that. But there are some specific areas that we know we need to work in. So we do have a roadmap, as it were, a new roadmap. And I think there's definitely momentum to understand the issues better and respond. But I think leadership and accountability is lacking. And this is really where I'd probably like to finish with. You know, is it nobody's business or is it everybody's business? We don't have a peak body to advocate for these groups. Many of our multicultural services don't have a specific health remit, certainly in WA, the Metropolitan Migrant Resource Centre, the Multicultural Services Centre. Their focus is more on settlement rather than health, so they're not here. They're not listening to this data. They're not aware of these issues even. We don't necessarily liaise across sector. What do we need? I think we need a coordinated response. I certainly don't have the answers, by the way. I'd like to work with others who are interested in finding out what those are, but these are some ideas. Back to this idea of human rights. You know, let's remember this is a human rights issue as well, good access to treatment and healthcare. We've said we don't want to leave anyone behind, so that should be our focus. If we want this herd immunity effect of coverage of population, that's what we need to focus on. Meaningful engagement with communities, that's what community-led, peer-led approaches, that was our success in the past. How are we going to do that with these populations? I don't know, but I know that's what we need to do. Representation, we don't see these groups represented up here delivering presentations or leading research and leading programs and services. They need to be surveillance and evaluation, improving the data that we have, and finally scaling up as soon as possible, as soon as we know what works. So coordinated response, sorry I've gone over time, community mobilisation, cross-border collaboration, roles and responsibilities need to be articulated, and these are the roles that need to be articulated. Everyone, we need to determine who is accountable for what and by when, and then each of these groups, we need to know what their role is in this and make it happen. So there's been great leadership political will in the past for our early epidemic. Let's do that again. Let's show Australia can do it again for the emerging groups and ensure no one's left behind. Thank you.